It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up later, we get the story behind a computer programming boot camp in Milwaukee that's looking to expand to other cities.
First, when it comes to determining the sexual orientation of someone we don't know, many people subscribe to the idea of gaydar, a supposedly intuitive ability to identify gay people by sight and sight alone. And while it's tempting to say that it's all in good fun, our next guest says not so fast.
According to his new research, there are two big problems with the idea of gaydar. Number one, it doesn't work. Number two, it can actually be a harmful form of stereotyping against LGBT people.
Here with us now to talk more about his latest research is William Cox. He's an assistant scientist in the Department of Psychology at UW-Madison. William, thanks a lot for coming into the studio today.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
So how would you define this term we're bandying about, gaydar?
So one thing is that almost anyone who even thinks of that term kind of has their own version of it, their own definition. But, you know, when we're trying to study it scientifically, we kind of try to hone in what the essential features are. And it's basically being able to tell that someone is gay without them directly communicating it to you in some way.
And there has been, it sounds like, some prior research before yours on this subject that seemed to confirm that, yes, there is this idea of gaydar that some people have, that they can tell someone's sexual preference just from these surface factors alone. What has that research been in the past?
So the past research, the biggest papers starting in 2008, showed that they argued that people have a facial perception gaydar process. So they took pictures of gay and straight men and also lesbian and straight women, showed them to people, and people, anyone, gay people, straight people, were better than chance at being able to tell who was gay just by the face pictures alone.
And you took a look at that study, and what did you find? You were not so sure about some of the way it was conducted.
Yeah, so we were trying to replicate the study. We didn't set out to challenge it. We were just kind of investigating it a little further. And what we found is that there were quality differences in the pictures for gay and straight people. So they used these pictures taken from dating websites, and we found that gay men and lesbians had higher quality pictures on the dating websites than the straight people. And the previous studies hadn't tested the quality of the pictures. And so then when we controlled for quality, either statistically or by picking like matched pairs on quality, the original effects just completely went away.
So do you ascribe that to the quality of the pictures?
Yes. Yeah, so based on the statistics we did and how the experiments we did, they indicate that the quality of the pictures seems to account for the past effects. And if you have this quality confound built in, we replicate the effects. We find the same thing. But if you take that away, there's no effect at all.
And so you wanted to go forward and see whether you got the same results, that gaydar actually existed. What did you do?
So I started with the idea that gaydar is another term for stereotyping. So when people are trying to determine who's gay or straight, they do it based on clothing or things like that, like, oh, look at what that guy's wearing, he's probably gay. And then this face stuff started coming around, and so I kind of set out to look at them together. So in the studies, we had the pictures of the gay and straight people, and I just thought I'd replicate the past effect, and I added manipulated stereotypic information. So in addition to a face that said something like, this guy likes shopping, or this guy likes the Packers, or something like that, so that then we could see how much of it is due to other stereotypic cues versus this facial perception process that the previous work found. And so then first we found that it was due to that quality difference, but then even when we had the quality difference in and people did a little bit from the pictures, they still relied much more heavily on the stereotypes.
Well, we're talking right now with William Cox, assistant scientist in the Department of Psychology at UW-Madison. He's talking with us about his new research challenging the idea of gaydar. Now, you said that you started this keeping in mind that gaydar was another form of stereotyping. How did that play out in your research?
So in the final study of the set, we were really looking at what this idea of gaydar, how it affects stereotyping processes, whether it affects stereotyping processes. And in culture with other stereotypes as well, racial and gender stereotypes, very often it kind of comes under the guise of an intuition where it's just, oh, it just struck me that that woman wouldn't be a good candidate for this leadership position. But really, it's your brain automatically activating stereotypes that we've learned from culture. And so the idea that gaydar, this intuition about who's gay, could be the same sort of thing really kind of fit with the work. So what we did in the final study in that paper, we manipulated what people believed in gaydar going into this task. And so we told some people, hey, science says gaydar is real. The past studies indicate that gaydar is this real perceptual process people have. And then there was a control group where we didn't tell them anything. And then there was a group where we said, actually, gaydar is just another term for stereotyping. They're really just two different words for the same thing. And when we told people that gaydar was real, they stereotyped much, much more than in the control group, which kind of supports the idea that the gaydar is what we call a legitimizing myth. It it's an idea and culture that legitimizes the stereotyping process by kind of camouflaging it as something else. And then when we told people that gaydar was stereotyping, they stereotyped at much lower rates, just of their own accord. We weren't encouraging them not to stereotype, but most people, their values say that, hey, stereotyping is not something I want to do. I don't like judging a book by its cover. And so just identifying it as stereotyping made people stereotype less because they're aware of it.
So you're using the word stereotype. Does that also mean that in its less benign forms, you could be talking about something like discrimination or prejudice?
So stereotyping, prejudice, discrimination are all very intimately related because stereotyping by definition is seeing members of a certain group in a very narrow way that they can only fulfill certain roles, perhaps in a professional context, and so on. And it's kind of well established in lots of other literature that stereotypes kind of legitimize prejudice. So by making, in this case, gay men seem frivolous and silly, they're into shopping and things that maybe aren't taken as seriously by some people, that makes their concerns easier to dismiss because it makes them seem like that whole group is frivolous. And then in some of our past work, these types of stereotypes specifically, when you're using a stereotype to make an assumption about someone, it's not necessarily publicly verifiable knowledge. So if I'm going around and I'm wearing a shirt that says I am gay and everyone knows I'm gay, if someone discriminates against me, maybe bullies me or commits a hate crime against me, people are reasonably going to kind of come together and say that was because of prejudice, that's problematic, and kind of punish the prejudice. But if I'm wearing something that makes someone infer that I'm gay, some kind of fashion or something that strikes someone as gay, it's not necessarily verified public knowledge. And so we looked at, and they can deny that prejudice plays a role in their actions if they express prejudice. We call this plausible deniability. We studied this in a shock paradigm in a 2014 paper where people were playing a game with a guy in another room and they got one little piece of information about him. They either learned that he was gay, like explicitly, so everyone knew, and so any behavior towards him could be attributed to prejudice, or they got a stereotypic cue. They learned that he likes shopping, which is something that in all of our studies, people very reliably infer that a guy who likes shopping is gay. And there's a subset of people who are personally very prejudiced, but they don't want other people to think they're prejudiced. So they only express prejudice when they believe they can get away with it. And when the guy was gay, those people didn't shock him very much because they knew people could accuse them of prejudice. But when we gave them the stereotypic cue that allowed them to infer his group membership based on the stereotype, they were basically allowed to engage in the stereotyping process and they could privately infer it and get away with it. They shocked him at much, much higher rates.
So you're saying people actually administered electric shocks to a subject more often because there were stereotypical cues given about this person.
Yes.
So how does that translate then to the real world? What happens when it's not electric shocks, when you're out there maybe in the workplace or anywhere else?
Well, one thing to emphasize from that study is that people who are personally invested in being non-prejudiced, people who are true, it's their personal values, their personal convictions say that prejudice is bad, they didn't shock the guy in either condition very much because they're good people, I would say. And it's, you know, this subset of people. So as far as most people, I think most people are going to fall in that category where it doesn't matter if you can get away with prejudice or not, you're going to behave consistently with your values. Someone who is trying to get away with it, this kind of smaller subset of people, it could definitely play out in actual hate crimes, bullying in schools. You know, if there's a kid who's out at school, that could actually protect him to a certain extent if the norms of the school kind of oppose prejudice. But if it's just something that you just kind of infer about someone and it's a kid who's not out at school, then the bullies might be able to get away with the prejudice more.
So why are people's judgments of sexual orientation so often wrong?
So this is something that we kind of show in the paper with just a simple mathematical proof. So at most, about 5% of the adult population is gay. And those numbers are just so hard to beat. So even if 100% of gay people actually seem gay based on the stereotypes, they're all just kind of walking around, fitting all the stereotypes. And so that's 100% of gay men, and only very, very, very few straight men, say 10%, seem feminine or effeminate and fit those kinds of stereotypes. Even though that's kind of a 10-to-1 ratio where gay men are 10 times more likely to seem gay, the mere fact that those gay men only make up 5% of the population means that there's still twice as many straight guys who seem gay. So there are just too many straight people who seem gay to let your gaydar kind of reliably make you correct more than you're incorrect.
So just briefly as we wrap up here, what is your overarching takeaway here in terms of people making snap judgments? What are we supposed to do with this information going forward?
I'd say in general, whether it's about someone being gay or anything else, you know, maybe kind of be a little more thoughtful and not rely as much on the snap judgments. So a lot of our snap judgments are just based on stereotypes and media representations that we learn from a very young age and usually probably don't reflect the individuality of the complex human being who's standing in front of you when you're making that kind of snap judgment. So just be a little more thoughtful and wait and learn more about someone rather than making an assumption about them.
William, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
That was William Cox, assistant scientist in the Department of Psychology at UW-Madison. He joined us to talk about his new research challenging the idea of gaydar.